Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with an investigation into the role of Cardinal Jorge Bergoglio, now Pope Francis, when he was head of the Jesuit order in Argentina, and look into his dealings with the Argentine junta, who kidnapped and murdered priests during the Dirty War. Sam Ferguson, a visiting fellow at the Shell Center for International Human Rights at Yale's Law School, who is writing a book, Remnants of a Dirty War, joins us. He has an article at the New Republic, When Pope Francis Testified About the Dirty War. Then we'll assess the impending withdrawal from Afghanistan, America's longest war, and what kind of functioning state will be left behind in the hands of kleptocrats and warlords, whose current leader, Hamid Karzai, is not just corrupt, but is mentally unstable. Christine Fair, a former United Nations political officer in Afghanistan, who is also a senior fellow with the Counterterrorism Center at West Point, joins us to discuss Karzai's latest outburst that has endangered the lives of American and NATO service members who he has accused of working with the Taliban. Then finally, we'll look into the growing possibility that there will be a military confrontation between North and South Korea following a warning by the North that the South should evacuate a group of islands on the border that the North shelled in 2010. Sung Yoon Lee, a professor of international affairs at the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy at Tufts University, joins us to discuss where bellicose rhetoric ends and military action begins. Joining us now is Sam Ferguson, a visiting fellow at the Shell Center for International Human Rights at Yale Law School and a former Fulbright scholar. He is writing a book, Remnants of a Dirty War, about human rights trials in Argentina, and he has an article at the New Republic, When Pope Francis Testified About the Dirty War. Welcome to Background Briefing, Sam Ferguson.
Thanks so much, Ian. It's great to be here.
And it's pretty clear that the Vatican have gone to great lengths to reject claims that the Pope had ties to Argentina's dirty war. They came out pretty quickly after it was announced that he was the new pope, and it seems that Reverend Federico Lombardi, who's head of Vatican Radio, a fellow Jesuit, has been if there's been any changes at the Vatican, it's been he's taking on a prominent role. Apparently, the Vatican press office has been controlled by Opus Dei, which is an extremely conservative group for the last 40 years. But now it would appear that Father Lombardi is taking the lead, and he has rejected claims and suggested that some of the sources for claims that Cardinal Bergoglio, or he wasn't even a cardinal, but he was head of the Jesuits at the time, wasn't sufficiently engaged, shall we say, in helping priests who have been kidnapped by the junta. Now, let's start with that. The Vatican's claim that the source, I guess it's Verbinski they're talking about, is not reliable.
That's true. The Vatican came out with a statement that said, quote, there has never been a credible, concrete accusation against Pope Francis. And they added that the accusations are fueled by a, quote, anti-clerical left-wing elements. Now, the primary interlocutor here is a investigative journalist in Argentina named Horacio Verbitsky, who is a columnist at the left-leaning Página 12 newspaper, who has been the primary accuser of former Father Bergoglio, now Pope Francis, summarized in a book, El Silencio, that came out in 2005. The primary source for Verbitsky's accusations is one of the kidnapped victims himself, who was a father named Orlando Llorio, who, along with Francisco Halex, was kidnapped by Argentina's Navy in May 1976. And Verbitsky says that according to an interview he had with Llorio in 1999, a year before Llorio died, Llorio, in fact, blamed the current pope for his kidnapping, effectively attributing the pope's role in the incident to spreading malicious rumors about him behind the scenes and marginalizing him from the church, something that he says was effectively a green light for the military to kidnap him. There are also other allegations against the pope. The oldest one comes from a human rights activist named Emilio Mignone, who said that the Navy kidnapped the two priests based on the fact that the then cardinal of Argentina, a man named Cardinal Aramburu, had revoked the priests' ministerial licenses days before they were kidnapped. And Mignone also said that possibly, that's a quote from the book Iglesia y Dictadura, that he wrote about the relationship between the church and the dictatorship, that possibly Bergoglio had also been involved in this incident in spreading rumors.
So what do you make of the testimony of this priest? He was kidnapped. He was tortured at the Naval Mechanics School. And how reliable is the evidence that Verbisky got from this priest, who's, after all, giving firsthand testimony, if it's correct?
Yeah, well, we're still working it out. It's interesting that in the 80s, when Iorio initially testified before Argentina's National Truth Commission, and then later in a trial in 1985 against the military commanders, he did not blame Father Bergoglio in the same way. And unfortunately, now that he's died, we have no way of verifying firsthand Verbitsky's account. So it's a sort of he said, she said. Now, there are corroborating pieces of evidence to Verbitsky's story. After Halleck went into exile, according to Verbitsky, he attempted to renew his Argentine passport from Germany. And this request was denied, and there's a cable from the Argentine Foreign Ministry about Halleck's request that says they got information from Father Bergoglio that he had, quote, suspected guerrilla contact and had disobeyed orders in the church. Now, whether this is as damning as Verbitsky suggested is up for debate, but that's the other main source of evidence against Pope Francis. Now, Pope Francis's explanation is completely opposite of what Verbitsky says. He testified about this incident in 2010 and effectively cast himself as not necessarily a friend of the two priests, but described a relationship that he said was that of a fellow Jesuit, of a brother Jesuit. And he recounted many steps that he took, albeit behind the scenes, to attempt to assure the safety and release of these two priests. He met, for instance, with Jorge Rafael Videla, who was at the time an army general and dictator of the country. He also met twice with Emilio Macera, who at the time was the junta's navy representative.
And he was in charge of the main torture center, right? The Naval Mechanics School, where these priests were held.
Exactly, that's correct. He was the navy commander-in-chief, and they actually say that despite his high position, he had very close contacts with what was going on at the Naval Mechanics School, where the two priests were held by the what's called the Task Force 332. This is one of the most notorious secret spy groups of the Argentine dictatorship, and they forcibly kidnapped and tortured and disappeared at least 2,000 people, most of whom were thrown out of airplanes into the South Atlantic. Now, Iorio and Halleck survived. What this has to say about the Pope's intervention or not is obviously unclear. Verbitsky has attributed the fact that they survived to intervention from the Vatican itself, and possibly even from pressure from the army dictator, who was in the midst of somewhat of a rivalry with the Navy at the time.
Again, I'm speaking with Sam Ferguson, who's a visiting fellow at the Shell Center for International Human Rights at Yale Law School and a former Fulbright scholar. He is writing a book, Remnants of a Dirty War, about human rights trials in Argentina, and he has an article at the New Republic when Pope Francis testified about the dirty war. So I guess the fact that the current Pope, then in 1976, the head of the Jesuits in Argentina, these priests were kidnapped in May of 1976. The Pope John Paul didn't excuse me. He didn't come in till 1978. But he one of the first things that the Pope John Paul did was to start a kind of jihad against liberation theology. I mean, that was probably one of his top priorities, that he felt doctrinally the church had strayed into the political left, and he wanted to make a correction. So that's kind of at the heart of this story, isn't it? Whether there's a story here or not, given the fairly passionate denials from the Catholic Church, who on Saturday the Pope did actually have a press conference, but it wasn't really a press conference because he didn't allow any questions, but it was kind of a love fest where 5,000 journalists were completely seduced by the Pope. And
Unfortunately, I can't comment as much on what you characterize as a jihad from Pope John Paul, but the political background to a lot of this is the Catholic Church in Argentina and indeed all across Latin America was deeply divided in the 60s and 70s between a sort of new liberation theology that saw work with the poor as being a kind of paramount calling for priests, and more reactionary or conservative elements in the church who saw this as straying from the more traditional interests of spiritual tranquility and sin and harmony with God and the other world. And these two priests that were kidnapped were indeed liberation theologists. And Bergoglio, in his testimony, recalls, in fact, that he remembers many rumor campaigns circulating around the priests and others who worked at the with the poor as quote-unquote zurdos, which is a kind of derogatory term for those on the left. Now, the human rights lawyer who cross-examined Bergoglio during most of the testimony really pushed him on this point. He asked, you know, where did these rumors come from? Didn't you understand that these rumors were dangerous? In fact, several priests had already been murdered who were suspected of being quote-unquote subversives because of their left-leaning theological beliefs. And Bergoglio really resisted, you know, naming names within the church. He said, you know, these were just general rumors. I don't remember anybody specific who this was. At one point, he even said, you know, I didn't give it a lot of attention. And when pressed on that particular phrase, he backtracked and said, well, it's not that I didn't think they were important. They were unfortunately just so common at the time that I had become accustomed to these rumors. Nevertheless, there are indications that Bergoglio did do things to attempt to save the priests, at least from his own testimony. In the days preceding the coup, he offered the priests refuge where he was living, which they in fact took up after the coup. And Bergoglio has said in other interviews that he, in fact, saved several other priests and helped smuggle one out of the country after he lent them his priest robe and sent him off to Brazil, I believe it was. So it's, you know, it's a very difficult story. You have to understand at the time that people used different strategies to attempt to save people. And seeing Bergoglio in the best light, what he did here is attempt to work back channels to secure the safety of these priests. Now, of course, that butts up against the version of Iorio, who says that, in fact, it was Bergoglio that was helping spread these rumors. And I suspect as this story plays out and world attention focuses on it over the next few days, we might get a better sense of which of those versions is true.
And what is it, a Spanish word again, a slang word for those that work for the poor, like these two priests did in the Bajo Flores slum? What's the translation for it in the word?
Zurdo. It's Z-U-R-D-O. You know, I don't actually know what it means in English. It's possible it means fox, but
it's a derogatory term for a leftist.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. That's exactly what it is.
So there is, of course.
Excuse me. I'm sorry. I just remembered it means left-handed.
Left-handed.
That's okay. Where it comes from. Yeah.
But there were priests and even a bishop, I think, that were murdered by the regime. These two priests did survive, and it may well be because of the intervention, because the Bergoglio, then head of the Jesuit order, met twice with the dictator, Jorge Rafael Videla, and the head of the Navy, Emilio Massera. Now, of course, some of the critics have said, well, the fact that he could have a meeting with these guys, at the drop of a hat is suspicious in itself. What's your reaction to that?
Yeah, the other question over what's going on here is just how much power then Father Bergoglio had at the time, that despite the fact that he was the head of the Jesuit order within Argentina, he was not yet a bishop, so he was not in the bishop's conference, which is the real nucleus of of church power within Argentina. So his story, you might read into it and say, well, he was a kind of mid-level church figure, and so that he didn't have that much power, so you can't expect him to have done, you can't expect him to have sort of saved Argentina from the dictatorship. But you have to remember, this was a dictatorship. And in many people I've been speaking with today, they basically say, you know, look, the church acted no better or worse than many other institutions in Argentina. And Bergoglio is really a figure like anybody else who was living at the time, that caught up in horrific moral situations. It's very difficult to sort of say who did what and what was good and what was bad. But as you point out, his critics say, well, he was head of the Jesuit order, which is a relatively significant order in Argentina. And the fact that he was able to secure interviews with Jorge Rafael Videla, obviously a powerful man, and Emilio Massera, another very, very powerful man who had ambitions to become president or dictator himself, is suggestive of the fact that he in fact could move some of the levers of power if need be.
So given that the main accuser of the current Pope for being to some extent in complicity with the junta, and certainly not helping one of the priests that was kidnapped. The other one, we're talking about Orlando Iorio, who is now dead. So we can't get any more information from him. But the other priest is alive, Francisco Hallis. He's in Germany, right, with the German Jesuit order.
That's correct. And in fact, Hallis yesterday or the day before came out with a somewhat ambiguous statement saying that he had reconciled himself to the past. He wrote a book in 1995 alleging that an unnamed individual had started spreading rumors about him. Verbitsky reads into this, and based on some other statements that Iorio made, that Hallis was in fact speaking about Bergoglio. But Hallis has really tried to distance himself from the past and has separated himself from this matter, and is not currently available for press interviews. I actually sent him an email the other day and didn't hear anything back. That's consistent with the one public statement he released the other day, essentially saying, I don't want to talk about this. I've, quote, reconciled with events and, quote, consider the matter to be closed.
So I guess in the broadest sense, you can't say that with any certainty that this Pope, the current Pope, then the head of the Jesuit order in Argentina during the Dirty War, was in any way in complicity. That's definitely a question. But you can say, surely, that the Catholic Church was not heroic in any sense, just as it wasn't during World War II with Pope Pius and the Nazis.
No, there are very clear indications. In fact, in 2007, there was a priest, Christian von Wernich, who was convicted of his role in a network of secret prisons in the Buenos Aires province. According to his accusers, he actually began to use the confession as an interrogation tactic within these secret prisons. The Episcopal Conference, just weeks after the coup, called on all Argentines to, quote, work for the salvation of the nation, and released a series of very ambiguous statements and the best of kind of incoherent doublespeak that at the time functioned as clear support for the military junta. There are others.
Well, they just taken over. So obviously they're saying if you're going to work for the good of the nation and these military thugs have just taken over, isn't that an endorsement of them?
Exactly. It was an endorsement of them. And although they made some statements saying that the state should, quote, respect liberty or conserve liberty, they also made statements such as, the state cannot, quote, renounce its duty to exercise legitimate authority, even if that means coercive means. So they were sort of speaking out of both sides of their mouth at the same time. And in the context, it was seen as clear support for the military junta. As I mentioned earlier, the church was not the only one. Even outlets such as the Buenos Aires Herald, which would soon become a kind of heroic newspaper and reporting on the many disappearances, gave a somewhat glowing editorial the day after the coup, calling the coup leaders, you know, men who had finally restored order. Argentina had had a long history dating back to 1930 of military intervention, and this cycle of weak civilian government military intervention was constant throughout the 20th century. So perhaps at the moment of the coup, nobody could really see the ferocity of what was to come. But the church, in fact, made positive statements about the military junta long after it was clear what they were doing in secret.
Well, the irony is, of course, that it took Margaret Thatcher to get rid of them.
That's true. The 1982 conflict over the Falkland Malvinas Islands, which the military junta lost, led to their collapse and the restoration of democracy in the country, which reached its peak with a 1985 trial of all of the military commanders. But unfortunately, the country was forced to pass an amnesty law after the military rebelled in 1967. Yeah, excuse me, 1987.
87, right. So just in closing then, Sam Ferguson, given the emphatic denials from the Vatican and the love fest that's going on with the new Pope, the Pope of the Poor, Francis, is it likely that we'll get any more clarity on this? I mean, I think you know the subject better than anybody. And it's not clear in your mind, is it, from what I gather?
Yeah, it's not. I mean, Verbitsky obviously has looked into this much, much, much more than I have, and I'm really getting up to speed in the last few days. But we'll see what happens. Some very prominent human rights activists, such as Adolfo Perez Esquivel, who won the Nobel Prize, have come out in Pope Francis's defense and said that some bishops were accomplices with the dictatorship, but Pope Francis was not one of them. Bergoglio, Pope Francis, one of his good friends, is actually a woman, Alicia Oliveira, who is a very prominent human rights lawyer and activist within Argentina. So it's a tricky story, and it in fact might simply just be the story of thousands, even millions of other Argentines who were trapped by this horrific dictatorship where, you know, our normal moral beliefs and commitments are thrown into tremendous turmoil. And it becomes very difficult to decide, you know, what's good and what's bad in those sorts of situations.
Right. But on the other hand, when horrible things like that happen to a society, it does bring out the best and the worst.
That's absolutely true, and nobody would argue that the church as an institution, that this was their best moment by any means.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us, Sam Ferguson.
Thanks so much.
Again, I've been speaking with Sam Ferguson, who's a visiting fellow at the Shell Center for International Human Rights at Yale Law School and a former Fulbright scholar. He is writing a book, Remnants of a Dirty War, about human rights trials in Argentina, and he has an article at the New Republic when Pope Francis testified about the dirty war. We're going to take a brief station break, and we're back talking about America finally getting out of its longest war. Yeah!